Let both stomp the ground until nothing moves beneath their undead feet. We've had our fun,
the god Bolas stated.
Now we grow weary of the impertinence of ants.
60. Liliana Vess. And that's that, thought Liliana, trying desperately to ignore her own unresolved feelings toward Beef Slab and the rest of the Gatewatch, who would shortly be dying all around her. Easier to focus on herself than on Gideon and what his friendship and trust might have meant to her, might mean to her, even now. So fine. Focus on yourself, Liliana. Blackblade has shattered. Gideon's fallen again, though he'll probably survive. With his invulnerability, he's probably the only planeswalker other than yourself who'll survive Bolas' greedy purge. But there's no stopping the dragon now. Which means I'll be his slave ad infinitum. For over 100 years, Liliana's sole focus had been on increasing both her lifespan and her power, with zero cost to herself. So now she had power, tremendous power, and because the dragon had a use for her and complete control over her, a solid chance at living forever. And that was when Liliana had a moment of clarity. This is not a life worth living. Serving Nicol Bolas for eternity is even less appealing than... It was hard for her to even complete the thought, but... than dying. She glanced down at an unconscious Gideon, his arms two bleeding masses, the shards of Blackblade scattered about him. Her eye twitched at the sight. Her mouth went dry. She actually felt itchy. Flush. A bead of sweat ran down her cheek. No, that can't be right. Liliana Vess does not sweat like a common kitchen wench. So maybe, finally, it was an actual tear. But if so, who exactly was she crying for? Seriously? Am I really going to do this? She really was. Dark mana swirled around her despite the certain knowledge that breaching her contract meant certain death. Bolas, distracted by his triumph over Gideon and the rest of his dupes, didn't instantly notice her change of heart. He ordered her to send Bontu and Oketra to finish off his opposition. Impertinent ants, he called them. He hasn't seen impertinence yet. The two remaining God Eternals didn't attack the Ravnikans and Planeswalkers. They didn't crush these ants underfoot. Instead, they stood at attention. In fact, every Eternal on Ravnica stopped fighting and stood at attention. Now Bolas took notice.
Vess,
he thought at her, and the single syllable of her own name hit her brain like a boulder, rocking her back a step or two.
Do we really need to warn you of what will come of this futile act?
She ignored him, even smiled, as Oketra, Bontu, and every damn other Eternal turned to march toward Nicol Bolas. She wondered what Jace was making of this. She wondered how long it would take him to realize what was going on. He'd better appreciate this. But she told herself she wasn't doing this for him. Not for him, or Chandra, or Gideon. If killing them all would have set her free, there was no telling how low she might have sunk in Bolas's service. But there could be no freedom for her. She knew that now. So she might as well enjoy what little time she had left. Bolas, she shouted, though she knew he was reading her every thought.
Has anyone ever told you you have a remarkably flat head? I mean, it's lucky you have those horns and that spirit gem to distract people, because I've never seen a flatter head in all my life. I've been wanting to tell you this for decades. Your head is very, very, very flat.
For the briefest of moments, she could feel his stunned confusion over the silly insult to his vanity as it wafted across her consciousness. It was short-lived, and followed by his immense contempt for her petty and pointless rudeness. But for just a second. Damn, that was fun. Almost makes it all worthwhile. Almost. The Eternals marched toward the dragon, and the repercussions were practically instantaneous. Not to him, of course, but to her. Her eyes and hands blazed forth purple and black magic that exercised her control over Bolas's undead army. But with the sundering of her contract, volcanic heat began burning up through her tattoos, which rapidly became cracks in her skin that revealed the fiery power fast consuming her from the inside out. And from the outside in. Liliana began to literally flake apart. She could feel it, see it, smell it. Her clothing, her skin. She was now a witness to her own disintegration. Bolas shook his head, almost sadly, though she knew he wasn't sad for her. He simply thought she was sad, which was to say, pathetic. His voice sounded in her head one last time.
What a waste.
His power radiated as pure, unadulterated magical energy that kept Oketra and Bontu at bay. Liliana struggled to maintain control. If she could just hold out for a little longer, she could push the God Eternals through the dragon's barrage. All it takes is a touch. Just one touch. A handhold, and they can harvest him like he's harvested so many others this day. But time was running out. Liliana Vess was dying, by her own hand, for a cause she couldn't quite see through, to help people, friends, who would probably die cursing her name. Then she felt a hand on her shoulder, half thinking it was a stray Eternal that Bolas had sent to harvest her spark. She turned. It was Gideon, bleeding from both arms, but tall and handsome and smiling at her. She watched as he extended his invulnerability to her, over her. No, he's not extending it, he's gifting it. She found herself thinking, "Stop. You do this and you'll take on my burden without protection. This will kill you, and you don't have to die. You're the one person who doesn't have to die." He just smiled again and shook his head. One would have thought he was Jace. His thoughts seemed so clear.
"Many have died to stop Bolas. Let me be the last."
"Gideon, please." He whispered,
"I can't be the hero this time, Liliana. But you can."
Liliana glowed with Gideon's invulnerability, pure white light which held her together, bound her back together, replenished her, and made her whole. In exchange, the black death magic of her breached contract crept up Gideon's hand, transferring from her to him. Her tattoos glowed across the shredded skin of his arms. He ignited, flaking apart as she had been doing mere seconds ago.
"Make it count,"
she heard him say, or think, or something. Looking back over her shoulder, tears now definitely rolling down her cheeks, she nodded to him, or meant to. Behind her, Gideon was dying. Though hardly the empathetic type, Liliana could feel his agony. He raised his head, closed his eyes, and howled. 61. Kithian Iora. Gideon raised his head, closed his eyes, and howled, and then stopped. The pain was suddenly gone. There was silence around him. No, not quite silence. The sound of battle, of magic, of death and destruction had faded from his ears, but he could hear the sound of birds chirping. A cricket. A brook. It was all like music. Cautiously, he opened his eyes. He looked down at his hands, at his arms. He was whole, not flaking apart as he had been just a few seconds ago, not even bleeding. The shrapnel from Blackblade was gone. Liliana's tattoos were gone. He looked down at his clothes. His armor was gone. His clothes were now of Theros, his home world. He looked around. He wasn't on Ravnica at all. I am on Theros. A field in Theros, with the city of Akros peeking over the next hill. A soft breeze cooled his brow, even as the sunlight warmed his heart.
Did I planeswalk here?
No.
The immortal sun would have prevented that. Is this a memory?
But he didn't feel young again. He felt older than he'd ever felt before, bone-weary, yet free of pain. And the scars on his arms? There were some from Theros. But there was a big one he'd received on Amonkhet, and there were a few new ones from the shrapnel.
No, this isn't a memory. This is my now. What's left of my now?
He sensed them before he saw them. They seemed to emerge right out of the sunlight, right out of the sound of the brook, right out of the breeze. His irregulars. There was Drassus. He had been 3 years older than Gideon, and now, frozen in time and unchanged, looked so damn young. There was Epikos, shaved head, bare chest, earring in his right ear, all muscle and a grin. There was little Olexo, the youngest of the irregulars, never to grow any bigger or any older. The weary and ancient Gideon Jura watched the boy approach, wondering how he had ever allowed this child to fight instead of simply grow up. Then again, in those days, Gideon had been a child too. And there was Xenon, tall and straight, with his shaggy, unkempt hair and that Cetessan green cloak he was always so damn proud of. Like the others, he smiled at his long-absent friend. Drassus, Epikos, Olexo, Xenon. His irregulars. Kithian's irregulars. Because he was not Gideon Jura now, here at the end. He was Kithian Iora once again. He hadn't gone back in time. Physically, he was still the same scarred, graying warrior. Yet despite that, he was himself before his name had been garbled by foreign tongues on foreign worlds. Before his sense of self had been garbled by his own vain actions. He had denied his true name for too long. It was time to claim it again.
I am Kithian Iora, and I am with my friends.
He opened his mouth to apologize, to say he was sorry for his hubris, for being the cause of their deaths so many years ago. But Drassus wryly shook his head and silently stilled Kithian's tongue before a word could escape his lips. All four smiled at him and placed their hands on his broad shoulders. For a brief moment, he felt sorry for more recent friends, for Chandra and Nyssa and Jace and Ajani and Aurelia and, yes, Liliana and so many others. He was here and found. They were back there and still so lost. But just being in this present gave him hope for them. They'd survive. Liliana would save them. Or Jace would. Or they'd do it all together. Or they wouldn't. But if this was the end, then the end perhaps was not so bad.
Not so bad for me, certainly. So I can hope not so bad for them.
There was sunlight and a cool breeze. The brook babbled on. There was serenity. Kithian was at peace. At peace, and finally, redeemed. 62. Liliana Vess. From an inch away, or maybe a world away, Liliana saw Gideon smile beatifically. Before his smile, his teeth, his skin, his eyes, his entire handsome, kind, muscular face began to glow with the hellish light of her tattoos, of her broken contract.
No,
she pleaded as the blaze expanded, as if attempting to burn her arm. Her arm, which could not be burned thanks to Gideon's gift.
Take it back. Please.
The smile was still there, right up to the moment that he burst into black flame and disintegrated before her eyes. His empty armor clattered at her feet. His ashes blew away on the wind. She looked up at Bolas. The dragon looked smug. She cried out in fury and pushed the god Eternals forward. 63. Chandra Nalar. Chandra and Nyssa arrived at the plaza in time to witness Gideon's complete obliteration, simply, it seemed, from touching Liliana's shoulder. Enraged, Chandra burst into red-orange flame that quickly roiled into an inferno of blue and white. Nyssa was forced to back away.
Chandra,
she said as if in warning. But for once, Chandra had no interest in Nyssa's words. The pyromancer was ready to kill the necromancer, to burn the woman Liliana Vess, whom she had once thought of as a sister, into ashes. Ashes would be a fitting end. Ashes such as those that were all that remained of Gideon, her Gids, of a man her silly younger self had once been foolishly attracted to and infatuated with, of a man she had come to deeply love as more than a brother. Once and for all, Liliana Vess would pay for her crimes, for all the death and manipulation and betrayal she had brought to Chandra's life, to Ravnica, to the multiverse. But Jace's thoughts slammed into hers.
Stop, Chandra. It's not what it looks like. Gideon saved Liliana. He chose to save her. And by saving her, he may just have saved us all.
Chandra, her mind reeling, didn't yet understand, but she obeyed, absorbing her fire inward. It felt atypically as if the flames were burning her heart, her mind, her soul. Tears streamed down her face, turning almost instantly to steam. Yet Chandra felt cold. So very cold. Nyssa tentatively placed a hand on her shoulder. A heartbroken Chandra turned to look in the elf's greenish-golden eyes.
Gids is gone, Chandra murmured.
Nyssa nodded sadly. From somewhere, they heard Ajani call out,
Look!
64. Nicol Bolas. The remaining god Eternals, Oketra and Bontu, approached Bolas from two sides, obeying Vess's command while struggling against the rush of power the dragon god held from the Elder Spell. Each took a step toward Bolas's throne, before that power pushed both back two steps. Bolas shook his head.
Vess, you are a fool. These gods could not stop us back when they were alive and we were weak. How can you possibly believe they can defeat us now? Now that they are dead. Now that we are, once again, a god.
Then, out of nowhere, Bolas experienced pain as intense as any he'd felt in a millennium. Time slowed for Bolas. He looked down. The two-pronged spear of Hazaret was sticking out through his chest, blood and viscera dripping from each time. His blood and viscera. It was not enough to kill him, not as he was now. Even the pain, even the wound itself, could be eliminated with a few simple spells. But how had he been stolen upon?
Who would even dare?
The god emperor looked back. Hovering behind him and holding the spear was that infant dragon Niv-Mizzet. Bolas's brain snarled,
Didn't we kill you already?
In response, Niv thrust the spear farther into Bolas's back. An audible groan escaped Nicol's mouth. Niv smiled grimly and thought back at Bolas.
You, above all, should know we dragons don't die easy.
With a flick of a wing, the dragon god sent the resurrected Niv-Mizzet flying and watched him crash to the ground 3 miles away. He then attempted to dissolve the spear. He could hardly end the pain or seal the wound while the weapon protruded from his chest. Strangely, despite his omnipotence, the god emperor found he could not simply make it disappear. This surprised him for a moment, until he remembered that he himself had forged the thing for Hazoret. His own newfound godhood was keeping her spear intact, as if by an act of his own will. This was but a minor setback, of course. Having realized his error, it would take less than a minute to unweave the spells, disperse its magic, and unforge the weapon. Still, it might be faster to simply pull the spear out. That would hurt, but he could exact his revenge for every instant of pain he suffered upon Mizzet 1,000-fold. 1,000,000-fold. But during that split second, while the dragon god deliberated between a magical and a physical solution to the problem of removing the spear, everything changed. Bolas realized too late that he had forgotten Vess, had given her an opportunity to strike with her own two-pronged weapon. Liliana's god eternals moved in for the kill and were suddenly right on top of him. Bolas barely managed to obliterate Oketra. But weakened by the effort and by the still undealt with spear, he was too slow to stop Bantu, who bit her former god pharaoh on the wrist. The pain was insignificant, certainly relative to the spear wound, but the damage had been done.
No! No! No!
At once and automatically, Bantu began harvesting. All the sparks the Elder Spell had granted him. All of them. All at once. Bantu absorbed these sparks but could not contain them. She ruptured into shards, exploding in a light so bright even Bolas was forced to shield his eyes.
No! I cannot be harmed by mere light! Not now! Not now!
A suddenly desperate Bolas tried to reabsorb the godlike power he had only so recently gained. He tried to pull the sparks back in. In fact, he expected them to return to his spirit gem, only to realize his elder spell had been disrupted. But there was still time.
I am still Nicol Bolas, Elder Dragon.
And the sparks were still there, swirling just above his horns in a vortex of pure power.
My power!
Through a haze of pain and his still bleeding wounds, he glanced down and saw an army of Eternals marching up the steps of the Citadel toward him, and, right behind them, a second army of Ravnikans and Planeswalkers.
But that's just fine. In a matter of moments, the ants will once again realize they all march forward to their doom.
And once again, his hesitation would be his undoing. He attempted to recast the Elder Spell, but he was too late. The vortex of sparks above him evaporated, each and every spark dissipating into nothingness. And with them, all his decades of planning, of scheming, of manipulating, and murdering. All of it was fading away, amounting to nothing more than a void where his power had once been.
The void. The void!
And then the truth hit him. Bantu hadn't simply harvested the sparks stolen from dead planeswalkers. She had also absorbed Nicol Bolas's own spark. When the vortex had scattered and the sparks had dispersed, his own great spark had disappeared along with them. Bolas was alive, but he was weak. Worse, he was surprised. Stunned.
I am no longer a god. I am not even a planeswalker.
He had been reduced to being the thing he hated most. A mere mortal.
An ant.
Liliana Vess. Liliana watched as Bolas began to dissolve, much as Gideon had dissolved moments ago. The dragon's telepathic voice, sounding shriller than it ever had before, echoed in her mind one last time.
No, no, this is incomprehensible. I am Nicol Bolas. This does not happen to me.
Then, also like Gideon, Bolas howled as he disintegrated, atom by atom, the particles blowing away with the wind. Of course, unlike Gideon, there was nothing beatific or beautiful about the Elder Dragon's final moments. Bolas was simply gone. It was over. Only his spirit gem remained, and it fell to the roof of the citadel, bounced a couple of times, and rolled to a stop not far from Liliana's feet. It lay there, inert, beside Gideon's empty, smoking armor. The unnatural storm clouds parted and dispersed, giving way to late afternoon sunlight. Liliana stood alone atop the citadel. She could feel Gideon's invulnerability slipping away. Nevertheless, she now had everything she'd ever wanted. Her youth, her power, her freedom. But at what cost? Jace reached out to her with his mind.
Liliana.
Expecting, deserving his enmity, Liliana braced for an attack, even a fatal one. Braced for it, she nevertheless made no attempt to parry or thwart it.
Liliana, are you all right?
Stunned at his tentative concern for her, she looked down. A veritable wall of unmoving, deactivated Eternals separated the Citadel from the Ravnikans and Planeswalkers, most of whom, she thought, would quite reasonably like to see her dead. She searched the crowd for Jace. She spotted two or three of him, illusions all, which he quickly eliminated now that the crisis had passed. But she couldn't see him, the real Jace. Couldn't spot him anywhere. Perhaps he's still invisible.
No, I'm here, Liliana. Look to your left. You'll see me.
But she didn't look to her left. She stared at the ground instead, at Gideon's empty armor. Jace felt her pain, her conflict, her lack of understanding of her own feelings.
It's all right, he told her. Gideon made his choice. He knew you could save us and chose to help you do just that.
Jace's fury she could have dealt with. His sympathy was more than she could bear.
Get out of my head, damn it!
She tried to scream it to make him break contact, but it barely came off as a mental whisper.
Listen, he thought. I've mentally contacted Saheeli, told her to turn off the immortal sun. She's working on doing that now. As soon as she does, well, you'll want to leave this plane, Liliana. As soon as you can. I know you saved us, but you really aren't safe here right now.
Get out of my head, damn it.
Liliana, please stop. Stop.
She could feel him accede to her entreaty. She could feel him leave her mind. She resisted the impulse to call him back, to look to her left, to find him. A moment later, she felt the sun's influence vanish. She could planeswalk if she wanted. The crowd below had snapped out of their shocked stupor and was already busy cutting down the Dreadhorde from behind, hacking them to pieces. Little pieces. It wouldn't be long before more than a few of that crowd would be coming up the stairs to do the same to her. Kneeling, she reached out, and her hand caressed Gideon Jura's charred chestplate. The metal was still warm. She tried to picture his last smile. She recalled that it had made him beautiful, horribly beautiful in her eyes. But she couldn't even summon up a specific memory of his face. She could remember that face dissolving before her. But the features and the humanity were indistinct, like the wisp of someone she had once dreamt of, not like a real man at all. He was already legend. Gideon would live on in Ravnica. But not the man. Few would remember the man, only the hero. It was a loss, she knew. Yes, he was a hero. Yes, he deserves the mythic status he's certain to achieve. But he was so much more than that. and the part that was more was exactly the part I allowed to die for me.
"Kill me now,"
she heard herself whisper, but she shook that notion off. "That wasn't you," she told herself. "That's self-pity, and self-pity is not your style." She found her own pep talk fairly unconvincing, but for now it would suffice. She wiped the back of her hand across her face, wiping away tears that a part of her was grateful she had been capable of shedding. She pushed that part of herself down. Down deep. She reached over and picked up Bolas's spirit gem, gripping it tightly. It felt ice cold in her fist. Then she stood, closed her eyes, and planes walked away. 66. Chandra Nalar. Upon the disintegration of the dragon Nicol Bolas, a massive cheer went up from the combatants in the plaza. But Chandra didn't feel much like cheering. She sat, practically collapsed, on the ground. Jace and Nissa sat down on either side of her as spiraling streamers of celebratory green magic flew into the air. People, grown men and women, were climbing up onto the ruins of the Bolas statue as if it were a playground for children. Children, appearing from out of nowhere, were climbing upon the fallen and dormant Vitu Gazi, despite Boruvo's attempts to wave them away. Warriors attacked the dormant Eternals, who stood stock still, looking up toward a throne that no longer held its emperor. The remains of the Dreadhorde made no attempt to defend themselves, as Ravnikans and Planeswalkers, led by Borborygmos and Angrath, began smashing and chopping the Eternals to bits. It didn't seem to Chandra as if this violence was a result of anger or malice or even revenge. It was a stolid, determined effort, something that simply needed to be done. Chandra could feel the hold of the immortal sun slip away. She watched from a distance as the tiny figure of Liliana planeswalked off-world. And she was but the first. With the immortal sun again disabled and the threat of Bolas and the Eternals past, the three old friends watched from the pavement as planeswalker after planeswalker departed Ravnica, as if afraid this nightmare could start up all over again. The Wanderer was the first to go, almost simultaneous with Liliana. Mu Yanling, Jiang Yanggu, and their dog went next. Others, too, whose names she didn't know.
"Gids is gone," Chandra repeated.
Nissa hesitantly put a hand on her shoulder. Staring straight ahead, Chandra said,
"You know, I was a little bit in love with him once. I never told him."
Jace said, "I think he knew. He loved you, too."
"Not the way I meant."
"No, but he loved you just the same. Like a little sister. But that's love. Just the same." She didn't need to say,
"I came to love him like a brother," or even, "I love you like a brother too, Jace."
She could tell from his expression that he knew. No psychic communication required. Chandra looked at the ground and started to weep softly. This time her tears did not turn to steam. They ran freely down her face, and Nissa surprised her by reaching out and wiping them away with her thumbs. Chandra leaned against the elf. Nissa stiffened for a moment. Then she eased her body and allowed Chandra to rest against her. She put an arm around the younger woman's shoulder and even began to slowly, gently rock the softly sobbing Chandra back and forth. Without looking at her, Chandra whispered,
"I love you too, you know."
Nissa whispered back,
"I love you as well, Chandra."
Chandra finally turned to look at Nissa Ravain. Then suddenly, someone was pulling her to her feet. It was Jaya.
"Come on," she said. "We have work to do."
Chandra didn't know what Jaya meant and was too tired for whatever work her mentor had in mind. But Jaya wasn't waiting for a response. With a firm grip on her protege's biceps, she tugged Chandra along behind her. Chandra barely had time to call out to Nissa, "We'll talk later," before Jaya had pulled her into the crowd. they made their way up to the line of mostly decapitated and maimed Eternals. Samut was standing there looking five shades of furious.
"This is not the way," she growled. "These are my people. They must be destroyed, I know, but not like this. Grant them some dignity."
"That is why we're here," Jaya said with a nod toward Chandra, who only now understood the gruesome job ahead for the two pyromancers. Angrath and Borborygmos had stopped their work and even waved their followers back. They kept watch. One way or another, the threat from these creatures would end here and now, but they respected Samut's feelings enough, or at least respected her battle skills enough, to let it be done in a way that assuaged her pride in these former denizens of Amonkhet. So, under the watchful eyes of the Minotaur, the Cyclops, and the Child of Amonkhet, the pyromancers moved through what was left of the inert Dreadhorde and meticulously burned every last one, every last fragment, down to ashes. 67. Teo Virata. This plane's single sun was sinking behind Ravnica's diverse and strange towers, the ones that were still standing anyway. Twilight was falling. And not the artificial twilight of the Elder Spell, but the real thing. Twilight, dusk, with night to follow. Teo thought of the promenade at dawn where Rat had found him. And then suddenly it hit him like a diamond storm that it had been less than a day since he'd left Gobokan. By the storm, it feels like a million years ago. He was exhausted, bone tired. Every one of his vertices felt as if it had been burned to a crisp. And if he never saw another geometric shape, it would be too soon. Plus, he was hungry. He realized his last meal had been over a day ago and a world away. Moreover, he had another impulse that left him wondering whether or not Ravnica had indoor plumbing. Kaya seemed to believe she could read his thoughts, or at least his expression. "It's all right," she said. "It's over. You can go back home now." "Maybe," he replied. "I'm not sure home is where I belong. I was a pretty poor acolyte." "Well, you're a damn fine planeswalker," she told him with a smile and a kind stroke across his smooth cheek. He blushed, and she chuckled under her breath, looking away so as not to embarrass him further. Teo sighed and looked around. Ral Zarek and his lover Tomik Vrona were embracing, kissing. It was nice to see, reassuring after all the tragedy Teo had witnessed today. They stopped, and Ral turned his body defensively as Vraska approached. Ral scowled at her, then, prodded by an elbow from Tomik, seemed to relent, at least a little, and nodded. She nodded back. Stepping up behind her, Jace Beleren tapped Vraska on the shoulder. She turned to face him. He looked old and a little broken. She melted a little bit, wrapped her arms around him, and gave him a hug. He hugged her back. For a long time they stood stock still in that embrace. They didn't speak. Then they kissed. Ral shook his head slightly and looked back into Tomik's eyes. All around them, people celebrated. Teo wasn't sure this victory merited much celebration, especially as those not celebrating were carrying away the wounded and the dying. And the corpses. So many, many corpses. "All those poor people died," Teo murmured mournfully.
"Boy, I don't give a damn about the dead."
It was a soot-covered Angrath, fresh from the eternal funeral pyre. He put a rough but not unfriendly hand on Teo's shoulder and went on.
"I can, on rare occasions, muster up some pity for the dying, but I reserve the bulk of my sympathy for their mourners. The trials of the dead are over, their sufferings at an end. If I shed any tears, they are for those left behind, for those who carry the overwhelming guilt and loss and despair that comes with surviving when their loved ones did not."
Teo thought he felt some of that guilt, and had only been spared the loss and despair because he barely knew any of the people he had met today. He had admired Gideon, but hadn't known him. There had been that other man, Dak, he thought his name was. They had exchanged a few words, trying to reassure each other before the last battle, and yes, Teo felt guilty that he had been unable to reach Dak with the shield before an Eternal had harvested his spark. But it was a guilt unconnected to any deeper emotion, any deeper loss or despair, as Angrath had put it. And fortunately, the two people he truly did feel close to, Rat and Kaya, had both survived largely unharmed.
"It's only the living who deserve your concern, little monk," Angrath said. "At least they're the only ones who deserve mine. The dead feel it not."
Teo nodded dumbly. "It's the living that deserve our concern. I need to find Rat." He went looking and found her staring wistfully at Hekara, who was occupied in the solitary pursuit of celebrating the momentous victory with two grotesquely and uncannily realistic hand puppets, versions of herself and Ral, that would have forever given him nightmares if he had seen them as a child. She provided the voices for both her hands.
"We beat the evil dragon, didn't we, Hekara?" the Ral puppet said. It was a fairly successful, if slightly high-pitched impression of the Izzet Guildmaster.
"Course we did,"
replied the Hekara puppet. Ironically, Hekara's affected baritone for herself sounded nothing whatsoever like Hekara.
"And all it took was for you to die horribly."
"Sure, but only once. I don't mind dying once, not every once in a while. You know, for a good cause, or for the entertainment value."
Teo saw that Hekara still hadn't noticed, still couldn't see her former friend. And Rat was so fascinated by Hekara and the show, she hadn't noticed Teo. Hoping to help, he stepped up to Hekara and said,
"Emissary, do you remember your friend Rat? Arathia?"
Hekara said,
"Of course I remember Rat. I love Rat. Where is she?"
Rat beamed, and Teo pointed toward her. But Hekara merely looked confused. So with a little reluctance, Teo took Hekara's Hekara-puppeted hand in his and attempted to guide, lead Hekara over to the hopeful Rat. But Hekara hesitated, resisted. For the first time since Teo had seen her resurrected, the fearless Blood Witch seemed nervous, uncomfortable, saying,
"You know, I can't quite remember what Rat looks like. That's sort of strange, isn't it?"
Teo wasn't sure what to say. Then he lost the opportunity to say anything at all, as the leathery sound of wings and the stench of sulfur caused them both to look up. The demon Rakdos himself was descending to find his emissary.
"Come, woman," he said in his booming sepulchral voice. "Ravnica is ours again. The long battle has brought the people low, and the circus macabre must play to the crowd and lighten all hearts. We have performers to gather, acts to prepare, and a ready-made audience yearning to forget the day's horrors by burning, bleeding, and burning."
"Oh, goody,"
Hekara said, seemingly forgetting Rat entirely as she allowed herself to be taken up in the demon's hand like a life-sized Hekara puppet ready to mouth her master's words. They flew off together, with Hekara squealing,
"Burn! Bleed! Burn!"
Teo had sought to help Rat, but realized he'd just broken the young girl's heart all over again by briefly offering her an unfulfilled hope. Trying to put on a good face, Rat smiled, shrugged, and said,
"I've lost her."
But she couldn't maintain the smile. Her shoulders fell, her head sank.
"I've never lost anyone before. Plenty of people I never had, but she's the first one who could see me who I've lost."
As if to add insult to injury, Saheeli Rai chose that moment to walk by. Not seeing Rat, she nearly walked right into her, forcing the girl to sidestep out of the planeswalker's way. Teo felt helpless, more helpless than he had felt since early that morning. He spotted Kaya approaching them and said,
"Don't forget, You still have the two of us.
Arathia Shakta nodded sadly and said,
Except you're both planeswalkers. You'll leave Ravnica eventually.
Teo, still helpless, looked to Kaya, who was considering Rat's words silently, mulling something over in her mind. Together, the threesome meandered over to join Saheeli and the other planeswalkers. A debate was going on about what to do with the immortal sun.
Destroy the damn thing, Angrath was saying.
Saheeli Rai protested,
But it's an amazing piece of...
It's an amazing mousetrap for planeswalkers. One I've been trapped by twice. And let me make this clear. I've no intention of ever being trapped by it again.
Vraska, her right hand entwined in Jace Beleren's left, said,
Destroying it may be easier said than done. It's made of extremely powerful magics, reinforced by Azor's own spark.
Jace rubbed his stubbly chin.
Besides, the thing might come in handy someday, for hunting down and trapping Tezzeret.
Or Dovin Ban,
Chandra Nalar added.
Or Obnixilis,
Karn volunteered.
Or, said Vivian Reed, Liliana Vess.
Teo noticed that both Jace and Chandra flinched when Liliana's name was mentioned in this context. Vraska looked at Jace with concern. Jaya Ballard and Teferi exchanged glances. The young shield mage barely knew any of these planeswalkers, but could see there was a complicated history between them and the necromancer. Nothing had been decided by the time the rest of the Gatewatch, Nyssa Rivain and Ajani Goldmane, arrived on the heels of the angel Aurelia, who was carrying Gideon Jura's scorched breastplate in her arms like it was a holy relic. Eager to change the subject, Chandra said,
We should bury that on Theros. I think Gid'sid'd like that.
What he'd like, Ajani said, is to know that it's not over.
It's not over? Teo asked, horrified. Ajani chuckled and put a reassuring, if dangerous-looking paw on Teo's shoulder.
I do believe the threat of Nicol Bolas has passed.
Then he turned to address all assembled.
But we cannot pretend Bolas will be the last threat to face the multiverse. If we truly wish to honor our friend Gideon, we need to confirm that the next time a threat rises, the Gatewatch will be there.
Chandra looked over at the demolished chamber of the Guild Pact and said,
We lost our clubhouse.
We don't need a clubhouse, Ajani said. We just need to renew our oaths.
Ajani, we all renewed them earlier today, Jace sighed, sounding a little exhausted, or perhaps exasperated. Don't you think once a day is plenty? Ajani scowled. The paw on Teo's shoulder involuntarily tightened its grip. The Leonin planeswalker didn't actually draw any blood, but Teo winced. Kaya noticed and delicately removed the paw, allowing Teo to breathe a small sigh of relief. Rat giggled, and even though she was laughing at his expense, Teo was glad to see a real smile on her face again, and in those plum-colored eyes.
Perhaps, Kaya said, perhaps I could take the oath.
Chandra looked at her hopefully and said,
Really?
Ral looked at her dubiously and echoed, Really?
I'm not a perfect person, Kaya began.
Trust me, none of us are, Jace interjected ruefully.
Vraska snorted, teasingly. Kaya basically ignored them both.
I've been an assassin and a thief. I've had my own moral code, but the first tenet of it was always, watch your own ass. I have the ability to ghost my way through life, to allow nothing to touch me. That's the literal truth of my powers, but it somehow became my emotional truth as well. But my time on Ravnica as assassin, thief, reluctant guildmaster, and perhaps even more reluctant warrior hasn't left me unaffected. Fighting beside you people has been an honor. The scariest and yet the best thing I've ever done with my somewhat bizarre life. What the Gatewatch has done here today?
She glanced down at the armor in Aurelia's hands.
What you sacrificed here today? Well, this'll sound corny, but it has been truly inspirational. If you'll have me, I'd like to be a part of this. I'd like you all to know that if there's trouble, you can summon me and I will stand beside you.
We'd like that, Chandra said.
Aye, girl, said Ajani, grinning his leonine grin, which Teo had to work hard not to regard as more hungry-looking than pleased.
Nissa, Teferi, and Jace all smiled and nodded their assent. Kaya took a deep breath and raised her right hand. Perhaps as a symbol of what she had to offer, she turned that hand spectral so that it became transparent, glowing with a soft violet light. She said,
I have crossed the multiverse, helping the dead, move on in service of the living. But what I've witnessed here on Ravnica these last few months, these last few hours, has changed everything I thought I knew. Never again. For the living and the dead, I will keep watch.
She turned and smiled at Teo and Rat.
Teo wondered if he should take the oath, or if anyone would want him to. But again, he was distracted by the sound of wings and the smell of sulfur.
He looked up, expecting to see Rakdos the Defiler, but silhouetted by the rising moon, he saw a dragon instead. For a horrifying second, Teo thought it might be Bolas returned. Instead, it was Niv-Mizzet, who landed in a somewhat showy manner and grinned at Jace.
You're out of a job, Beleren, the dragon boomed. The Firemind is the new living guild pact, as it was always meant to be.
Jace chuckled. And yet somehow I don't seem sorry to be giving up that particular responsibility. Teo glanced around the crowd. No one seemed upset about Jace being replaced by Niv, except maybe Lavinia. She looked briefly wistful, nostalgic perhaps, but her expression soon hardened to its usual stern demeanor. Ignoring the dragon completely, Nissa leaned her head over one of the many cracks in the plaza's pavement. She closed her eyes and breathed deeply. From between the battle-broken cobbles, a seed sprouted and rapidly grew into a plant with large green leaves. Nissa nodded to Chandra, who somehow instinctively knew what the elf wanted her to do. The pyromancer carefully plucked three of the bigger leaves from the plant. Then, Teo, Rat, Kaya, Vivian, Angrath, Saheeli, Niv-Mizzet, Teferi, Vraska, Jaya, Karn, Ral, Tomik, Lavinia, Ajani, and Jace watched as Aurelia, Chandra, and Nissa lovingly wrapped Gideon's armor in the leaves. Aurelia handed the armor to Chandra, who, flanked by Jace and Nissa, led a solemn procession toward the celebrating and mourning crowd. A forlorn Aurelia watched them go but did not follow, though most of the other planeswalkers did. Ral touched Kaya on the shoulder and gestured with his eyes for her to wait. Tomik did the same to Vraska, who nodded and called out to Jace that she would catch up. A confused Teo and a curious Rat waited alongside them, as did Lavinia, Aurelia, Saheeli, and the dragon. They were soon joined by Voril, Exava, Ganshokta, and Boruvo. The latter smiled at his goddaughter Arathia, though, as usual, her own father was unaware of her presence. Once they all were gathered, and as soon as the procession of the Gatewatch had safely gotten far enough away, Saheeli morphed into Lazav, causing Teo to briefly wonder where the true Saheeli Rai was at that moment. But other concerns soon forced that concern from his head. The Firemind spoke first.
As the new Living Guild Pact, I have consulted with representatives of every guild.
Kaya raised an eyebrow at Tomik, who nodded. Niv continued.
We have agreed that certain individuals, those who collaborated with Nicol Bolas, must be punished.
Vraska bristled, her eyes brightening with magic. I won't be judged by the likes of you.
You have been judged, Lavinia said sternly but without threat.
and your actions on this day have mitigated that judgment. Ral, making an effort not to raise a hand to cover his eyes, said,
You are not the only one Bolas misled and used. Kaya and I share that particular guilt. We may have realized our error sooner than you did, but we have no desire to quibble with an ally. Not with an ally willing to prove her allegiance to Ravnica and her own guild.
Vraska looked no less suspicious, no less on guard, but her eyes ceased to glow. I'm listening. Aurelia said,
Hundreds, maybe thousands of sentient beings died on Ravnica today.
With untold property damage, Tomek added.
Ignoring him, Aurelia went on. Such acts of terror must not go unpunished. There are three who did everything in their power to aid and abet the dragon. Tezzeret, Dovinban, and Liliana Vess. Without thinking, Teo said, But didn't Liliana...
Voril interrupted, Vess changed sides too late, only after being the direct cause of most of the carnage.
What exactly are you asking? Kaya said unhappily.
All three are planeswalkers, Lazav said. They are out of our reach, but not out of yours.
The Firemind finished.
Ral Zarek has already agreed to hunt Tezzeret. Vraska, as penance for past sins, we assign you Dovinban. And Kaya, the 10 guilds wish to hire you to assassinate Liliana Vess.
68. Jace Beleren. Jace Beleren walked alongside Chandra and did everything save casting an illusion to hide the truth he felt sure must be obvious on his face.
Nicol Bolas is not dead.
Within moments of Bantu biting Bolas and harvesting all his sparks, a telepathic voice had echoed in Jace's mind saying,
Nicol Bolas must not die here.
It took Jace a second, but he soon recognized the voice as belonging to Ugin, the spirit dragon. An incredulous Jace balked at Ugin's command.
You must be joking. Bolas will die, here and now. And don't believe for a second you can protect him.
I will protect him, and so will you.
You're very wrong.
Think, Jace Beleren. Bolas has died before and was resurrected more dangerous than ever. I died too, and you have seen the result. Do you not think it possible that a dead Nicol might become a spirit dragon like his twin? And would that entity be a version of Bolas you'd care to face?
Your twin? But we can't let him—
Do not misunderstand. I know what my brother is. Help me now, and I will place a living Bolas in an eternal prison with myself as his eternal jailer. You will be rid of us both, forever. It isn't simply the safer course. It is the only course that guarantees the safety of the multiverse.
If you're so determined, what do you need me for?
You and yours have beaten him, weakened him. But he remains an elder dragon and will not willingly come with me. It will take all my strength and concentration to take him from this place. I need you to hide our conflict from your fellow planeswalkers, from your fellow mortals, even from Niv-Mizzet. I need you to hide the fact that Bolas lives.
If this is the right course, why hide anything?
Any planeswalker who sought vengeance and came to find him in his prison would risk releasing him. The multiverse must think Bolas is dead, even though you and I both know we cannot risk killing him.
I don't know that.
You do. Bolas planned contingencies for everything. Death did not stop him before. It will not stop him now. But imprisonment? Bolas could never conceive of such a fate, and will not have planned against it.
So Jace followed Ugin's instructions. He used an invisibility spell to hide Ugin's arrival and his attack.